Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
I think that there's definitely a bit of catching up to do with Australians. Us Aussies are really relaxed. We are a relaxed bunch. And I think for a long time, that perspective was not taken to trade shows. It was very transactional. And so this is where we really wanted our business to go, because we knew that if we could get people thinking this way, they would just get much better results.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, thank you, Craig. I'm live in Nashville at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. We are on the tail end of Exhibitor Live 2024 and have a special guest with me today. We first met in the U.S., but she's from Australia. It's Jess Turnbull from the Exhibit Company. And I'm just so excited. We're going to be talking to you today, Jess.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So Jess has a varied background, but she started out outside of the industry, but fell in love with it somewhere along the way. I think that might be safe to say. And we're going to uncover a lot of her story and her experience as we have a deeper conversation into everything that she's done and all about things Australia and a few other things along the way.
Thank you, Jeff, for that amazing introduction. I'm really looking forward to sharing my passion for trade shows with you.
Oh, good.
I'm on a mission for helping people get better results. So this is a really nice opportunity for me to be able to talk to you.
Well, good. And it's an honor to have you on. And so let's get right into some of the questions.
Let's do it.
You know, you haven't been back in the U.S. and I was wanting to do the interview live. So I'm glad you're back here. And we've had a really good week, I think, at Exhibitor Live 2024. Do you think it's been a good week for you?
Yeah, it's been a great week. I have met so many people. It's been great to come back to the US and be reinvigorated, re-inspired. There's so many great ideas. I always come away with so many takeaways.
So you do see this as kind of an inspirational kind of venture for you when you're here, not only the networking and all that, but you're looking at what people are doing on the show floor at live and all of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I don't know how to put it. I feel like trade shows are in your genetic makeup. Our Australian population is so much smaller and it just means that everything is on a smaller scale. Not to say that there aren't a few large exhibits and some very creative ones over there as well, but I just see, not that I put every American up on a pedestal, but there are certainly some amazing trade show campaigns that I have seen, and the caliber of speaker at Exhibitor Live is just so fantastic.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Since I fall into that category, maybe I'm not the one you're talking about, but that's good. No, so you got to go to some classes this time.
I didn't count them, but I would say I went to about 15 or so.
That's a lot.
It was a lot.
So you and I first met years ago. Well, I don't remember what year it was, but
I think it was 2014.
That long?
Yeah.
That's
long time ago.
And you were in some of the sessions or whatever. So we met during that time and we've kind of kept in touch ever since then. So anyway, we're glad you're back. And I also felt like this year at Exhibitor Live was the best we have seen since 2019, because you know, everybody went through the downturn during COVID, but the feeling, and I told the team from Exhibitor Live last night as they were closing, we were kind of doing a big group hug. You guys did a really good job because most of them are new. This is my 25th year speaking as a speaker at the show, but they've done a lot of new things. They have a lot of new people. The attitude seems to be up and the attendance was up. What's fascinating to me too, at around 50% of the people here were here for the very first time. So they're new to the industry and they're new to the show. And so there's just a lot of newbies in the field.
And I'm sure that would have influenced the feeling as well, because there's nothing like your first time.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing. The excitement and all of the people gathering together and sharing ideas, you just realize, like, let's be frank, it's a funny industry we're in.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, we're all a little nuts. And put us all in a room together and you realize that there's other people who are just as nuts as you.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think it's a sense of belonging.
Yeah. No, you do have that connection with people, even no matter where they're from around the world. If you're in the trade show and event industry space, you know, you share a lot of common bonds across cultural divides even. So that's
right. And growing up, you don't wake up going, when I grow up, I want to organize trade shows.
Yeah.
It's a funny little niche.
Well, you might have, because your father was in the industry, right? He started a company. Is that how you got into the industry?
To be honest, I don't think I really understood what he did for a really long time. And I didn't really have much of an interest. I grew up wanting to be a real estate agent. That's all I did. By the time I was 20, 21, I was a licensed real estate agent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I bought my first apartment. I got a taste of it all. And I sold real estate in one of the most affluent areas in Sydney. I was, I was living the dream for a bit. I loved it.
Sounds nice.
And then I think I just got a little bit over it. It was a bit of a boys' club. I was still really young and I found it quite hard not looking older at that point.
You didn't look old enough?
No, I didn't have enough wrinkles. I really...
problem to have.
It was at that age. I really wanted wrinkles. Boy, has that changed. But I think then I was finally like, okay, right, Dad, what do you do? I'm ready. Tell me about this.
Right.
He had sold his previous business to the staff, and we were in this really unique position where we just decided to go out together and use my skill set, which was very different to his, and come at the industry with a completely different perspective. And we saw this opportunity to not just be service providers, but really think strategically and help people through that path. And I think from my real estate experience, where I understood buyer psychology and I knew people would think logically first about a house, how many bathrooms, how many bedrooms, how many car spaces, what's the price tag?
Yeah.
And then they would get emotional. And I think it's exactly the same with a trade show campaign.
Mm.
You know, you think logically first, what's your budget? Who are you trying to attract? Who's your target audience? And how can we really make it special for them? And then the emotions come into play. But
right.
I think that there's definitely a bit of catching up to do with Australians. Us Aussies are really relaxed. We are a relaxed bunch. And I think for a long time, that perspective was not taken to trade shows. It was very transactional.
Okay.
And so this is where we really wanted our business to go, because we knew that if we could get people thinking this way, they would just get much better results.
Yeah. That's fascinating. How difficult of a journey has that been for you? Like, were you an anomaly, in other words, trying to do stuff that other companies weren't really in this space, in this niche, that you realized? I mean, was that trying to sell a service to companies that didn't know they needed that service because they were looking for something else?
100%.
Yeah.
And to this day, they are still like that. I think there's a changing of the guard happening right now.
Okay.
Let's call it pre-COVID and post-COVID.
Yeah.
I think pre-pandemic, people were, they liked the idea of getting ROI, but they didn't really think it was possible. It's this elusive unicorn, a trade show unicorn that's out there that people have heard stories about, but they don't really believe exists. And I think that post-COVID, people are finally, maybe we're a bit ahead of the curve, maybe you're right, but people really needed to start demonstrating clear value. People were dipping their toe in the water. There's still people who are not really coming back to trade shows in the same capacity because they've invested in other means digitally. You know, their marketing mix has expanded in other ways that it didn't before. But I think face-to-face is just always going to be there. There's so much online white noise that there's nothing that beats a handshake and the relationships that you build. And sometimes the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, interesting. For us, I would say in the U.S., and that's what my perspective, you know, of course, I'm saying for us, the value of face-to-face became clearly apparent to people at high levels in many organizations that never had really taken it as seriously. As a matter of fact, many of them saw it as a big drain on their budget because it is expensive, as we all know. But they were, they realized, because they were trying to do all virtual or whatever, even besides the hybrid stuff, they were doing all virtual, and it was just not nearly as effective. You didn't have people staying on calls all the way through. They would drop out. They were multitasking. They may have been on and they weren't checked out, though they were doing email or whatever. So did that same thing happen for you guys as well?
Yeah, like virtual, I think to do it really well, it's actually quite expensive, but I just don't think it has any cut through at all. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to be blunt about it. I think that day that we were able to come back and do trade shows properly again was a beautiful day. And I think there's a lot of camaraderie that comes with it. But what we saw was that while attendee numbers were down, the people that were attending those events were decision makers. It wasn't a junket anymore.
Mm-hmm.
A sales manager wasn't sending a whole team of people out to a trade show.
Right.
It was just key decision makers. So I think your strategy has to change. How you present needs to change, because you're not sifting through the crowds to qualify as many people. You're just,
trying to find
the one.
Before you were trying to find a needle in the haystack sort of thing. Now it's a better audience, I suppose. Yeah, I hate to say it that way, but a better audience or a more qualified audience. Perhaps.
But it also means that you can't get away. You can't think that you're instantly going to get great results because those people are there.
Yeah.
You still need to show up. You know, whether we like it or not, we all judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
And then thinking more broadly, like, how do you extend the footprint of that show? What are you doing before the show to get those people in? And what are you doing during the show to really make that a fantastic experience for them? And then what are you doing afterwards to progress them forward in your sales cycle?
Yeah. So all of the conversation we've had so far, we haven't talked about building anything. We haven't talked about like booth properties or any of that. Do you get involved in that?
And yes.
If so, that's probably the emotional side that you talked about out of the first, you're making a rational decision, but how big of a part does that play? Like the physical aspect?
Our motto is strategy first, design second. I think if you really nail your strategy, you have a North Star to guide you. Budgets can change. The direction can change with what you're wanting to produce. There can be a big voice within an organization that says, we really have to have plants, or we really need to do this. But at the end of the day, you have something to guide you, and you can keep coming back to it and go, okay, with this new information we have, how can we make sure that we are still on the right path to achieving our goals?
Yeah.
And so I think that there is so much stress often put on the design brief for what something should look like. And when a client comes to us originally with a really detailed design brief, I like it, but it's always the reverse brief that we produce for a client that really condenses down the meaning of what we're trying to do that has the most impact. And yes, of course, we help them with the design, the construction, the installation. We're an exhibit house. That's our bread and butter. But adding this layer at the beginning is just the secret sauce. Yeah, it's what makes it all work.
Yeah. No, that's great. I'm just wondering too, like if you're in a bid process, like it's one thing if you have existing clients that you've sort of trained or you've introduced to this sort of thinking. But for bidding on projects for the first time, or, you know, the companies you haven't worked with before, has that been a challenge at all?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not going to lie. I think because it is a very different way of working that isn't expected, like a lot of the time people will come to us just, they're trained, right? It's just what they know. They come to us with a brief, they'll get three different exhibit houses and they will just submit their brief and expect a design to be spat out the other side. And if I can't actually talk to stakeholders and get the information that I need, I'm not going to be able to demonstrate clear value. We're never going to be the cheapest. We don't have a warehouse of things. We project manage the whole setup. And I think that it just doesn't speak to my soul.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of my job. I'm a trade show strategist. I love to really help solve problems. And I think that that's where I can really add value to a client, because like anything, if you're able to get an adjudicator or a third party to come with fresh eyes and really help you navigate the path, you're able to do much better things than if you just do it alone with what you know.
Right. No, I think that's great. And collaboration, I mean, do you often get them to engage and collaborate with you after you get started on that? I mean, it's probably not a one-sided, like, we're going to do all of this and tell you what it's going to be. I mean, you probably, knowing you as I do, I'm guessing you try to engage with them and get them to, of course, give you more feedback. And as you're collaborating, and it's an iterative kind of process to a degree.
Absolutely. It's never just something, it's not a dictatorship. I don't just tell them what to do and then leave them. A lot of the time when I'm pulling together a playbook for a client, it means that we're having a really frank discussion at the beginning. It's a round table. We really just pour everything out. We try to talk to multiple stakeholders, get everybody on board, set up those key objectives from the very beginning. And I think that makes it much smoother sailing as you go along the process. I think that's still where we're in our infancy, because in Australia, sometimes you only get that one contact, and then it's up to them to share the idea and the excitement of the campaign. And if it's something that you haven't done before, you get met with a little bit of resistance sometimes, because it's, you know, not how we've done it in the past. I'm sure you've heard of that happening quite a lot.
Yeah.
But you know, those people that are listening and they're doing it, it's really powerful to see the results. We've had a client who simply changed their key message and it improved their performance, but they got 30% more leads just from having a really concise, clear message.
Wow.
And that's, if you're able to start measuring those things, that's when you start really getting buy-in from people.
Obviously a very comprehensive, holistic approach that you're taking. You're working with a lot of brands in country, right? Are you working with some of those brands going outbound from Australia to other places? And are you working for inbound brands coming to Australia from, say, the US or whatever?
Yes, we work with a lot of brands. Overseas, we haven't been doing as much internationally lately, and I think that's definitely a sobering fact of COVID. A lot of the companies that we work for will have headquarters overseas, so they just generally have marketing departments and connections already over there. So our main focus has been within Australia.
Okay. So what does the profile of your staff look like as far as the team? Like, I know you're a strategist and you do that, but do you have designers on the team and all of that? Or what kind of people, account managers or project managers, what does the rest of the group look like?
We're a very lean core team.
Okay.
So my stepdad, Chris Lamb,
yes.
He's been around for a very long time.
He has, yes.
Very long time.
I've known of him in the industry. I don't remember that I've ever met him, but I certainly know of him. Yeah.
I'm really lucky and blessed to have learned a lot from him. But we have a different skill set. He has an engineer's brain. He knows what works, what doesn't work, and he will tell you very quickly. He's endearing once you know how direct he can be. But that's who he is, and that's what makes him great. He's really fantastic at looking at a design and pointing at the one thing that is the watch out.
Right.
We're really great at working in a scenario where things need to be used in different configurations, and that's really his genius. He's so great at that. Being able to work together where I see the strategic side and we layer that together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. So we've got Petra, who does our project management, and now Jake. It's, like I said, a small core team, but then we have subcontractors who we work very closely with, and they're our little black book. We're able to pair the right people with the right contractors, and I think that's a really great advantage that we have, because, you know, different designers have different strengths.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
If you're doing a small job, sometimes that's better suited to one type of designer. But when you want real creative ideas or you need multiple designs, you really need someone who is able to, that's a real skill to be, it's like writing an essay and then completely rewriting it in another way.
Yeah.
It's a skill. And the same happens with our construction. Australia's bloody big. Am I allowed to say that on here?
Yeah.
Bloody big.
It's not a cuss word in the US.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
It is.
I don't want to put any money in a swear jar.
It's I haven't not got a any cuss US word money. For us, so you can say it. We know what you mean.
And half the people here don't take PayPass. I don't have any money.
Okay.
In Australia, you can pay for everything with your phone.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Wait.
Even the swear jar, huh? It's not a cuss word. I might have to label this one as explicit now.
No kiddies listening?
No. Well, probably not. I don't think any kids listen to our podcast.
Probably not.
So where were we?
We pair the right contractors as well. And we're really lucky in Australia. We can bring our own installation team to site. So there is an advantage if you're building something new for the first time that might be a little bit more challenging to just know that people who built it are actually the ones installing it.
Well, I wish it were that way here, but of course it's not. We're an anomaly in that regard, and that's affected every aspect of the industry. But everywhere else in the world, pretty much, the people that build the exhibit put it on their truck, drive it sometimes straight inside the hall and unload it right beside the booth space, you know, and set it up. Or at least they can bring it to the loading dock and then unload it and, you know, cart it over and set it up. And that changes the dynamic, of course, of everything that happens. Because what ends up happening for us is, you know, you have to build it as a kit. So it's easy to assemble. Some assembly required, some people say, but you have to be able to set it up and put it together easily without a lot of, well, you have some instruction, but anyway, you get the idea. So it's quite a different approach. I wish we had the approach that you guys do and many other countries do, but that probably will never happen.
Well, we still have to try and make it relatively smooth sailing because with costs going up, I know that our install times are really shrinking. Often we'll have bump in and it's only a day. So you are kind of limited with what you're able to build. Not like Europe where you get 4-day bump ins.
Yeah. I think everybody complains about not having enough time though because of, you know, the next show starting or whatever.
Parkinson's law.
Maybe.
You only have it if things will take as long as you've got.
Yeah, true. Your work takes the space that you have. So I want to talk a little bit about cultural differences. In one of my talks, when I look at profiling different countries around the world, Australia ranks as most similar to the United States, along with like Great Britain, Ireland, and some other countries. I mean, obviously we share a common language. Yours is a little bit better, and I like the accent really well. I've always enjoyed a good Australian accent, but we have similarities between the cultures. What do you see are the differences? I think you mentioned something to me yesterday, even in a conversation about something that you said, oh, that would never happen in Australia.
I was talking to Paul Billings, who is a professional engager. So people will bring him onto, or his teams, onto their booths to help engage audiences. And he's a master at what he does. It was really wonderful hearing him speak and role play for us, but I said to him, like, that wouldn't work in Australia. He was so forward. I feel like an Australian would just see that as hot and heavy, bit scary. You've had too many coffees. Whoa, back away. Mm. We are so chilled. We don't like being sold to. And I think that carries over to our trade shows where we walk into an environment and we're just slowly, we'll look from the outside and we will be the deciders on whether we want to engage and have that conversation. But it's a little dance that people need to do on that booth. They need to, it's a delicate balancing act. They need to look like they're ready to engage, but they're not about to pounce.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to play it cool.
Yeah. So hold back a little bit maybe or not be too aggressive.
That's right.
And no, don't say the first thing like, oh, can I scan your badge? Like how many times I get in a conversation and if you're in the third sentence, they're already going like, okay, I've qualified him enough. I'm going to scan him. and somebody else walks up and scans your badge while you're having the conversation with the person. And it's like, I know what they're doing, of course, but
we're people first. Yeah. We're people first, not leads.
Yeah.
We don't walk around, I'm a lead. We're people.
Yeah.
So have that real human interaction. Talk to us like we're people. The note taking and the scanning should be what happens at the end. It's still expected. They're happy for you to do it, but it shouldn't be the first thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very transactionally minded.
Yeah. But you know, that body language plays such a big part. I know that it's a well-known statistic that 7% of what you say is actually taken in. I don't know if I'm framing this correctly, but 80% is how you are, and physically that is so important in a trade show environment. You know, you can't stand behind a counter and expect to get great results. You also can't be right at the front, like trying to pull people in if you don't do it well.
Yeah.
That's a balancing act.
That's good. This has been part one of my interview with Jess Turnbull of the Exhibit Company in Australia. Hope you've enjoyed that live from Nashville. And stay tuned for part two, which will be coming out shortly.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.